Before we start, or actually, as we start back, I want to ask Dr. Morgan to answer a question or address a question, and then he'll take us on into session three. And that is for the church planters that are here today. Dan, can you comment or speak to the issue of helping them transition from maybe a mindset or a strategy that's church planting by addition to church planting by multiplication? Because obviously, that's a topic that we're talking about today, but what I see in working with church planters across North America today is that church planting is rarely on the radar screen of many people, and when it's on the radar screen of most people, it's usually just difficult just to even think about getting one church planted. So how can we begin to think from the beginning, even before we hit the field? Some guys are already in the field. Some are considering being there in the near future. What do they need to be doing right now to begin to transition that thinking? Instead of thinking about planting a church here, maybe another church there, but to begin to start thinking in a multiplicative type manner.
We were talking about this yesterday with students about strategic church planting. And what I told them is the mindset has to be the stewardship is to church a region. That's stewardship. It's not just to plant one church. That thinking, you know, for you church planters, the key to it is, again, to think about it in terms of the kingdom. Is your calling in walking with God as a minister of the gospel is the Great Commission to extend the kingdom of God to the ends of the earth. When you plant a church, you've not fulfilled the Great Commission. You've only begun to be obedient. You've only begun to take your part in the whole effort of the church to be obedient to the command of Christ. Now, I can't force you to go into a church plant with that attitude, but I will say that it pleases the Father. And I think His blessing will be upon you as you go into it, not with an empire kind of perspective, that I want to plant the next mega church in X county, but that I want to do my part to see that every person in this county has a credible witness to Jesus Christ and the opportunity to become part of a New Testament community of faith. When that becomes your focus and not how many more people can I get into my church so that they can pay me a full-time salary so I can get off support? Well, I mean, that's a natural concern. Your wife will remind you of that, no, you're not in this to get rich, but we do need groceries. But as you trust God for the big picture, the Lord God provides resources that you can't even think now, beyond what you can ask or think. And He opens doors of partnership, cooperation, and sponsorship, the opportunity to bless other people as they come through. You've planted a church, and the Lord raises up others who come to you and say, I really want to minister to this particular group. They're in your region, and you have the opportunity to bless them. You need to do that. What's that proverb? There's one who gives away and gets all the more. And there's one who hoards what he has and has even less. There's a spiritual principle there. That when you hold the resources God gives you in an open hand, then He freely gives you more because that's the appropriate stewardship. All that I have, the Lord can take as He chooses because He's sovereign. Not grasping. You know, this is the little bit that I have, and I'm going to hold on to it. When Jesus said the fields were ripe to harvest, somehow that strikes a chord with me. I know that in church planting, there are individuals that the Lord brings along that radically advance the cause of Christ when you win them to Christ. There are people that collect relationships like some people collect stamps. And when they come to Christ, their whole network, large as it is, hear the gospel. There are others who collect information with a view to passing it on to people who need to hear. When they get saved, they know who needs to hear the gospel. And there are others who are great persuaders to consider the claims of Christ. You just treasure it. They're like gems buried in a field. And in my mind, I see it as when a church planter only works a very small plot, the Lord entrusts him with the harvest of that plot and the gems of people that are buried in it. When a church planter has the gumption or faith to work a bigger plot, then the Lord in turn entrusts him with the souls harvested from that larger plot and the gems of people buried there. And if another man has faith to work a huge plot of the harvest field, then I think the Lord entrusts him with the souls to the capacity, to the faith of the man working it, and all of the gems of people that are there. The Lord wants to bless. But He doesn't bless the selfish. Yes, that would be... I'll quit there. Session 3, the strategic planning team. This is probably the linchpin. The key. How you construct this makes or breaks the actual process of planting a church, and therefore the momentum building potential of the whole process. Unless you can produce successful church plants, the process doesn't grow and multiply. It falls apart. So let's look at the strategic planning team. There are some principles as I analyzed what Dr. Minton, what Jim Gatliff are doing. There are some principles I think we need to pay attention to in developing your own equivalent of a strategic planning team. One is that it's a covenanted partnership. This provides stability over the life of the project. One of the problems I ran into early on in the Northwest was that some partners are unstable. They may have been pressured to help with a church plant. Circumstances may change for them. Whatever the reason, if they haven't made a written covenant, they come up with reasons why they need to leave, why they need to pull out. And that is devastating to the church planter. You don't want that. The second thing, principle, you need an expanding pool of sponsors. However you accomplish this, by your own skill as a persuader, through the commitment of church plants to be a part of additional plants, however you accomplish that, you need to have a way of expanding the pool of sponsors. You can't go to the well too many times. You have three churches that sponsored a church plant, and you continue to go back to them. No, you have to expand the pool. And that expansion, by whatever means, is how Dr. Minton raised the participation rate from 3 or 4 churches to 60% of his churches being sponsors or partners in a strategic partnership team. So you've got to expand the pool. Whatever system you have to do that, that's a principle for success. That planter has to be free to implement a strategy. This will be the third time I've said that. You pick a man you can trust. You assess them until you're sure that you can trust them theologically. You can trust their character. You can trust that they're a self-starter and will work hard. And once you trust them, then you give them the freedom to implement their strategy. Now, it doesn't mean you don't have any input in the strategy. You'll recall that I said there's like a second meeting where at the time that you commit funding, you also review the strategy. The partners at that point can say, you know, Bud, this dog won't hunt, and express their concerns. And they may be legitimate concerns. It may be that during the implementation of the project, the church planter may come to one of those quarterly meetings and say, gentlemen, I need some insight. I have a problem here, and I haven't been able to solve it, so I need you to help me. In the Northwest, as I was part of these partnerships as a strategist, I saw a tremendous camaraderie develop between the partners at this point, where the church planter felt free because they were not imposing their own methods on him, but there was the opportunity to share the principle that they had learned, oftentimes through hard knocks, of how to get through this problem. Because most of them were relational problems or situations in the church that needed to be handled, and the other partners had experienced it. The fact that the church planter listened and took advice affirmed the partners. Even though in many cases we're talking about a diversity of methodology and style between the partner church and the planter. You know, they would not have done what the other one was doing at all. But on a principle level, as they learned to communicate together, there was an admiration and a bonding and an affirmation, a friendship developed that was very profitable. But that was in the context of the planter being free to implement a strategy. The partners fund, another principle, they fund a quarterly budget based on demonstrated need. This is not a pie-in-the-sky kind of budget. This is the planter coming in and saying, here were the results from last quarter. Here are the plans I have for the next quarter that will continue the process of growth. And here's the budget it's going to take to accomplish these strategic goals this quarter based on the results from last quarter. It's a very, you know, formal process. It's very orderly. And it's something that, you know, the accountant can put the pencil to and see, is this reasonable? And the partners look at that and they agree, yeah, this looks reasonable. Or they say, you know, I think you're spending too much money here. There's a way to do it less expensively and get the same result. So there's a dialogue going on. At the end of it, the partners commit the funding for the next quarter. In the case of the state and the association, that's where the most flexibility is. The church partners tend to have fixed funding. They don't have the flexibility. So whatever they've committed to, they've committed it for this period of time. But the state and association, they typically will adjust their funding to cover shortfall, to provide some extra funds, or they'll throttle back because the church planter knows that the goal is to help them become self-supporting. That's the goal. And so the goal is achieved as the partners can throttle back in their participation financially as the planter grows the church and they take financial responsibility for what they're doing. But there is this orderly funding process that's essential for success. The fifth thing, you need the part, I think, now Jim, of course, would disagree and you're free to disagree, but I think there's tremendous benefits when the partners help to assess the planter. When they sit in on the assessment and they observe the answers from the planter, this is part of the process of learning to trust the planter. And trust is essential because there are always going to be opportunities and situations that come up where the planter is going to have to act out of his entrepreneurial instincts. Most of the partners are probably not entrepreneurs. And so they're going to have to trust him. But he's going to do some things that, from an operator's perspective, from the non-risk taker's perspective, look squirrely. It's like, I would never do that. I would not take that risk. Well, you're not the church planter. The church planter considers the risks and then they take them by faith. So there has to be trust. I think that helps when the partners help assess the planter. It's an important part of this whole process. It also, by doing this, your partners learn to assess. And as they learn to assess, you're expanding the pool of assessors. You're increasing your capacity. From a kingdom perspective, you're also beginning to develop the ability to train other associations. You can lend them assessors as they're getting started, just as someone is going to have to lend you some assessors as you start out. To begin this process, you need a success story. Nothing beats a success story for increasing support. So partners help assess the planter. The sixth principle, the planter needs a veteran planter coach. Oftentimes, pastors are wired radically differently than church planters. We've talked a little bit about that. Because that's the case, and because they've not ever started something from scratch, pastors coaching a church planter will oftentimes give them some intuitive advice that's all wrong for an entrepreneurial situation like what the planter faces. It's much better if you can find a pastor who has planted from scratch and let them be the coach. We think, we being the Nehemiah Project, we think the healthiest thing is to make sure a planter has a coach for 2 years. And what I mean by that, at least one face-to-face a month, a couple of hours, maybe over breakfast, where they can draw some things out on paper, deal with some substantive issues. Probably in addition to a face-to-face every month, they probably need a couple of phone calls. Just, hey, I needed to check with you. This opportunity came along. I wonder what you think about this. So a face-to-face and a couple of phone calls, and that's probably all the coaching that a church planter should need in a given month. Now, there will be exceptions. Maybe he's planning an advertising campaign, and he needs somebody who's an expert to sit down with him and go over it. But a veteran planter coach is an essential part of the process for success. The covenant. The covenant is a key part of the partnership. Note, first thing, the partners commit for the duration of the project. They commit to meet quarterly. Now, the partners all commit to meet quarterly. You don't really want a partner who's going to bail on the meetings, even if they're funding. You want them there. You need the relationships to develop. You need the cross-pollination that occurs. And then they need to be faithful to give month. Whose responsibility is it if they sign the covenant and they don't send the check? Well, it falls to the ADOM, usually, to make the tough call, make the phone call, and ask, you know, what's gone wrong? You know, you agreed to the partnership, and the money's not coming. And to deal with the situation. It's really not the planter's responsibility to be hounding the other partners for the money. Okay? But in the covenant, the planter is guaranteed, in writing, again, you can look at this covenant, the right to implement a strategy. The planter, in turn, commits to be accountable to team for results and finances and for his own character and behavior. The state and association partners, they will adjust their money quarterly as planter's budget requires. And everybody signs and gets a copy of the covenant. So you're working off of a covenant. It's a signed covenant. It's filed. in the associational office. Every partner has a copy of it. Everybody knows what their responsibilities are. You can see some of the statements of it. There's general statements. There's the church plants covenant, the sponsoring church and partnering churches covenant. The association and the convention covenant with signatures and dates. And you can see this example from the Northwest Baptist Convention. There is statements on doctrine. There's statements on church membership. There's statements on the requirement that the church plant give people opportunities to respond to the gospel. On cooperation with state agencies. They've addressed, in this document, they've addressed most of the concerns that churches tend to have. I mean, this has been revised many times based on church input. The concerns churches have about new churches. You know, will they continue to partner? Are they just going to use us and bail? The fact that these congregations that we plant will be Baptist congregations. They'll be Baptist in their theology and their polity. Those are all things that are covered in the covenant. And then, you can see at the back, there's some question and answer section. Because the kinds of things that come up. Like what pastoral duties will the mission pastor be authorized to perform? Under financial responsibility, what are the financial responsibilities of each cooperating entity? How do you change the document? How do you terminate the relationship? Those are all things in that covenant. And as things go on, you know, as you develop a partnership, then the expectation would be that you would modify this covenant to fit the particular concerns of your constituency. It's a living document. Continues to evolve as time goes on. Now, how do you initiate the strategic planning team? ADUM or staff asks the church to consider being a partner. And the fact is that in order to initiate a church into this partnering relationship, the commitment gets adjusted to the capacity of that church. Small church, weak budget, small commitment. Dr. Minton has the strategic planning team assess the planter. Jim Gatliff has a team of assessors do it. I prefer having the strategic planning team in on the assessment because I think it builds trust. But the other system works. Strategic planning team gathers to review the strategic plan of the planter, to commit funds, and to sign a covenant. And those quarterly meetings are a big deal. I don't want to minimize the commitment on the part of the association if you implement a process like this. In the case of Bluebonnet, where I've participated, currently, because of the number of plants they have, the meetings of the strategic planning team take a full 2 days to accomplish. Currently, 2 days a quarter are committed to this one meeting after another with the partners all showing up. You know, in some cases, one of the church plants that's like in its second year may be a part of a strategic planning team and leading one, so both a partner and a planter. So they have to be there for two consecutive meetings. It's worked out so that it's the least burdensome it can be. But there's a sense in which, as the work of the association goes, this is vital. There's no sense that this is, oh, another meeting. There's a sense of anticipation and engagement in doing this work that really communicates that this we're doing the work of the kingdom. And the things we say and the things we do in this meeting are having a substantive effect on the ministry of the association in its area. There's a sense, I don't know how you feel about meetings. I tend to not like them. But there's a sense in which these meetings strike me, having participated in them, as this is significance. This is a significant use of my time. I don't resent being part of a meeting where substantive results come out of it. I feel like I've participated in extending the kingdom as I'm attending these meetings and participating in the discussions, rejoicing in the results, and helping to frame the next quarter's effort by this church planter, cheering him on to be successful. Just some details on the quarterly meetings. The budget is funded quarter by quarter, even though the commitment is for a set period of time, say 2 years, or maybe 3 years in your case. It could even be 4 years. I know in the Pacific Northwest, oftentimes, it took 5 years to complete a partnership because of the slow growth that was experienced there. That's a tough area. I don't know if any of you are in areas tough enough to warrant a five-year project, but probably so. The budget's funded quarter by quarter, though, because needs change as the church is planted and grows. The planter is in charge of the meeting, so he convenes it. Everybody shows up, he convenes the meeting, he's in charge. And what happens is he first presents a review of the results of the ministry initiatives. He had planned, his strategy was this. And there's a report on this was the strategy, these were the actions that were taken, this was the money that was spent. What happened? What were the spiritual results of our efforts? There's a review of the finances. How's giving? How was the money spent? Was there an overage? Was there an underage? And then there's a projection as they review plans for the next quarter and the money it will take to do it. There's a projection based on a per capita, you know, if the church is growing by this many people over the next quarter, on a per capita basis, what would be the expected income of the church given the per capita income of the last quarter? And as they grow the church membership, they grow the church budget. And then they come up with a number and they fund it that way. Project growth in people and finances so that they stay on track, oops, sorry, misspelled there, for self-support. Very orderly process. And then the state and associational leaders commit to funding. Now, this is a tool for the DOM. I'll tell you how Dr. Minton works it. Basically, with this partnership approach, the strategic planning team owns the church plant. One of the problems in any church plant is the hijacker, the person who comes in with a different agenda. Every church planter has that problem. In fact, I would probably predict that once a year at least, a church planter has to deal with someone with a divergent agenda that wants to take the church in their direction. And they figure it's a small church with a weak leader, and I can come in and have my way. Dr. Minton has described one of his confrontations. He says, if a church planter comes into this quarterly meeting, and if 2 quarters in a row, the strategy that was implemented doesn't match the strategy that was proposed, he just automatically asks the planter, who in your congregation is hassling you? Because from his perspective, the only reason that strategy diverges in the middle without any consultation is pressure from someone. Someone hassling them, putting pressure on them. Well, the way we did it in our church, and so he then says, well, call your core group to a meeting. He used to be a Navy commander. So he puts on his commander hat. And he walks in. And I share this with you because it is how the strategic planning team benefits the planter in a significant way that's not really a part of the quarterly meeting. He calls the team together and he sits down with them and says, I represent the association and the strategic planning team. This is our church planter. We own this church plant. It's ours. And this is our man. We have confidence in him. We've placed our trust in him. We believe that he's God's man for this situation. We are glad that God has led you to be a part of this core team. If you can give your loyalty and follow this man, we want you to be a part of this church plant. But if you can't, you're going to have to leave, because the church is not going another direction. He's our man. We're backing his strategy. And so you can either participate and follow his leadership, or you can leave. Usually by the end of that meeting, the hijacker knows where things are. And since there's no way to hijack something that you can't get a handle on, they leave. The church planter has been served, has been blessed, because somebody with a few gray hairs and a strong jaw has come in like, you know, Matt Dillon into Dodge, and he's enforced the law. He hasn't had to do that very many times. A lot of times the church planter, once the church planter experiences that once and knows that the strategic planning team is backing him, they trust him. They're not going to betray him. Nobody can go around their back and gossip to one of the partners and undercut him, because the strategic planning team has already assessed him for character and strategy, and they believe in him. Can you imagine what that does for a church planter? When they know that the association believes in them, even in hard times. It's a wonderful thing. You talk about building loyalty to the association. That happens one time, and you've got a partnering church forever. The strategic planning team can accomplish that. It's the personal face of strategy implementation in the association. It puts a human face on it. It puts a relational aspect to it. It's one of the benefits of doing it this way, where each strategic planning team is specific to that project. It's not some general mission committee that doesn't know the planter, really. But it's personal. It's relational. It's a partnership. It's a friendship. It blesses the planter and makes him part of the team. Between meetings, what happens? The ADOM, or the strategist, is the contact person. Or so if you have an ADOM who is the strategist for the association, then they handle problems or issues that happen between meetings. The ADOM, in turn, is accountable. As he initiates new projects, he's accountable to whatever the associational mission team is. Now, I'm assuming that there probably is one. And their concern is overall strategy. So when the ADOM commits to a project, he's committing on behalf of the mission team. And he's bringing a report back to them. Okay, this month or this quarter, we've committed to these new projects. You know, based on the mission team's guidelines for budgeting, etc. So there's an accountability on the part of the ADOM to the mission team for new projects that are initiated. The planter, in between meetings, he's cultivating relationships with the partners. It's a two-way street. The partners are inviting the planter to come and speak at their church, to talk about the new plant, to push down commitment to church planting from just the pastor and staff down into the congregation. so that the congregation buys into the notion that we are a church planting church. We're a missional church. We're a church that's engaged in outreach. So they have the planter over to talk about what's going on, about who's getting saved, about the ministry that's being done. And by turn, at opportunities like some of the events, like block parties or evangelistic outreaches, people from the partnering churches are invited to participate. So again, they get to firsthand see what God is doing. The partnership builds in this way, and it creates an interest in being a partner in the future. Because once the congregation buys into the notion that we're a church planting church, then they're prodding the pastor. When are we going to do another one of those projects? See, I want to be a part of this. I want to be a part of what the church plant is doing. I want to help them with their Sunday school or with visitation or whatever it is, with a block party. And you begin to mobilize the members of the churches, and as the members of the churches become more mission-hearted, the health of the association improves tremendously. And giving improves. Between meetings, the planter spends to the limits of his budget to accomplish his stated objectives. See how that works? He has a freedom. He doesn't have to call the secretary of the association and ask if he can spend the money. When that quarterly meeting is over, he walks away with spending authority, decision-making authority, to implement the strategy that he's proposed to the team. Again, this empowers the church planter. And as you're doing that, you're really increasing the health and the potential of the whole association to expand its ministry. As you set a pattern of empowerment. Okay, that's that session. We've got one more to go. Are there any questions? This has been a really nuts and bolts thing on the strategic planning team.
Dan, let me ask a question. Let me just sort of back up and just tell a personal story and then ask you a fairly tough question. I was meeting
with... Why don't I tell a story and you answer the hard question?
I was meeting with some church planters one time. It was not in this state, but a state distant from here. And these guys had a great desire to be partners at the associational level with the other churches that are already established in the area. And they had a strong calling from the Lord to be church planters in their area. They had calling, they had the character, they had the skills, just solid guys. They weren't even asking for financial resources or anything like that. And the response that they gave to me was, J.D., you know, we have taken the initiative to connect with our local association and partner with them and be a team player. But they basically just shrugged us off and just don't want anything to do with us. So what about the church planters that are maybe sitting here and they're saying, I am all for this. I would love to be able to be a part of a support network, support system that can help me. But the association to which we're going to work or going to serve or currently in, they just don't have any desire to come along and help equip, partner, journey with us in this. You know, what do you do in a situation like that when the structures that are in place just aren't really concerned? It's not on their radar screen. I know it's a tough question, but...
Well, I'll answer
You're the pro, man. You can answer this.
I have a story to go with it. I helped plant a church back in 1978, and it was a cell church. In 1978, those didn't exist. There wasn't a model. There was no Southern Baptist model of how you do a cell church. So, needless to say, we were looked at with some skepticism. And in fact, in the association in which we planted the church, they had a long history of seminary students starting churches, pastoring them to pay for their seminary education, and then abandoning them to the association, of course, as they left to go take a pastorate. So the association had finally become fed up with this, and they put in their bylaws A church cannot be a church of the association unless they own property. Now, they want to know that you've got some stability. Well, we had made an intentional and strategic decision that we would defer property because we were training lay people to do church in a way that would thrive in cities outside the South where you couldn't buy property. So there's a strategic reason why we're doing things the way we're doing them. Well, that meant we couldn't be a church in the association. So 1 year, we were the 17th largest giver in the association, but we were a mission. And the DOM even joked with us, you know, if you guys had been a church, you would have been the 17th biggest giver to the association, or church giver to the association, and just kind of grinned. I was part of the team, so I watched the senior pastor's response to that situation. What he did is he continued to cooperate, he continued to give, and he overlooked the slights. He continued to train church planters and send them out. He continued to participate in some of the pastoral meetings, even though at every turn he was disrespected and denigrated and put down in subtle ways that people sometimes weren't even aware of. But because he was willing to do that, because he remained a team player through some pretty tough years, a new DOM came who said, I understand the reasons for that rule, but it's nonsense. And had them change it, and we came into the association at that point. And because of the decisions we have made, or we had made during that time, we opened the door for other church plants who came after us to be a part of the association because we hadn't burned bridges. So the answer to church planters that can't get their association to partner with them is do your best to be diligent in planting a church that would please God, continue to give to the association, and develop a church planting center that will send out church planters all over the world and saturate that area with New Testament churches that do want to partner. In the case of this church, it's sent out about 85 church planters, maybe 25 International Missionary Board people, 15 BSU directors. It's continued to be fruitful. And part of the blessing of God was because in the face of discrimination and unfair treatment, they continued to follow God and be a partner. So that would be my advice. You can't let the response of the association determine what's right for you to do as a kingdom player, as someone who's committed to extending the kingdom to the ends of the earth and of churching a region.
Someone else? Another question. We have time. No one at all? All right.
Give them a break.
Let me make this advertisement during this time. If you are not on our email list, I would encourage you to do so. There's a sheet that some of you signed as you came in. If your email's not on there, I'd encourage you to put your email address on there because between now and this spring semester, we're the Church Planting Center here at the Southern Seminary. We're doing a different little half-day, basically we're calling them mini-conferences, once a month. And so this month we're talking about regional multiplication strategies that really are connecting with the associational leadership and state leadership as well. But next month, Lord willing, on the 21st, is that correct, February 21st, we're going to be doing a half-day event related to cross-cultural church planting within a North American context. Dr. Van Sanders from the North American Mission Board will be here with us. Dr. Sanders served with the International Mission Board among the Pocock people in Africa, and he's been serving with the North American Mission Board for some time as well. Actually, he was here in Louisville for some time. Some of you may know him. And he has been for some time stirring the waters about the importance of an issue that you talked about earlier, Dan, and that is identifying, understanding people groups that are living in a North American context. And so what he will be talking about is some of the work that's going on within a North American context, some how-to approaches to identify, study, research, and then at the end of our time talk about developing church planting strategies that are working to connect with people groups here in a North American context. So that'll be in February. Lord willing, in March. And then in April, we're going to be doing two other half-day events. We'll have a couple other gentlemen here, one in March and one in April, related to planting churches in basically rural North America. A lot of folks are, believe it or not, moving to rural areas and still in rural areas. And rural areas still need the gospel as well, and they need churches to be multiplying throughout their areas. So he will be here. Steve Nerger will be here talking about planting churches in basically rural United States, rural Canada. And then Bob Burton will be here sort of taking the other side of the coin. We're going to look more toward an urban type of church planting later on in this semester, particularly among multi-housing communities. Very large population segment within North America that live in multi-housing, high-rise condos, mobile home parks, apartment complexes, duplexes, resort areas. And many churches are not being very effective in reaching those. And so Burton will be here to talk about church planting in multi-housing communities. And so if you are on our mailing list or email list, we will be sending you updates letting you know what's taking place, when it's coming about. They're all going to be free. We're going to, again, the format will be very similar to what we're doing here. We'll provide lunch for you as well. Really just as an opportunity to help equip, train, provide a resource, but also to strengthen networks with people that you may not run across in other paths, because church planting is a major networking ministry, as you all well know that. So let's stop now, and we'll take a break right up to about the hour. Come back to our last session, and then they're going to probably be setting lunch up over here on this side of the room, maybe while we're meeting, but after that, then we will have lunch together.